This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
In the studio to dissect the games, we have captain and star keeper Chris Oldfield. G'day, Chris.
Good evening, lads. How are you?
Quite well. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad.
Thanks for joining us in tonight, taking your time out on a Tuesday evening. So it was a big week for Avondale. Obviously, three games in 7 days, two games that we want to take a look back at. The 2-0 win versus Preston. This was a tough game. Preston played extremely well. What did you make of the game and Preston specifically?
No, it was a very tough game, to be honest with you. Preston were fantastic, I thought. I thought they were well-structured and a great unit, good attacking team. And he took it to us, to be fair. We expected it to be a tough game, but I didn't think we fully appreciate what they were going to come with. But the boys stood up and we got the job done.
Did they take you by surprise at all? Because, you know, watching the game, they looked quite dangerous, especially, you know, down attacking out wide and then from set pieces, in particularly corners. I mean, you said you knew we had a tough game coming ahead, but even then, did they sort of catch you off guard a little bit? Was it a case of being caught underprepared at all? Or
Zoc told us that they were quite a mobile team, so we expected speed and pace on the wings. And I know Louis, the coach, quite well, and he tries to get a team built around pace and speed. So we can't expect it, but, you know, it's different to seeing it. And obviously, the boys adapted pretty quickly, but Preston had a great side and got a good coach. And, you know, we adapted pretty quickly and we managed to win.
Well, they seem to have a good combination of both speed and then physical gameplay as well. That's sort of been a thing that Avondale have struggled with in the past. Not so much this year. I think we're getting better at it personally. But what did you make of the game, Josh?
Yeah, very competitive. Lots of big challenges flying in early in the game. You know, not unsporting ones, but just hard at the ball.
Hefty. And
I think the game was very end-to-end, especially to begin with. I mean, it was very open, very good to watch. And nearly 2,000 people in attendance at ABD Stadium up in Broadmeadows, which was sensational to see. All those fans streaming in through the gates, and they were really treated to some contest. And Preston, you know, they had their chances. They, you know, could have punished Avondale if the finishing in front of goal had been a little bit, you know, more tidy. But Avondale really showed the quality in the end. I thought the centre-backs really stood up well against the waves of pressure, and then eventually the forward line did punish Preston for missing those chances. And, you know, it was just a really good game to watch. And I think, to be honest, Preston probably gave Avondale as good a test as any NPL side have done this season. So got to be credit to the State League One outfit for taking it to the NPL leaders.
Well, absolutely. And you mentioned a couple of those that they had really good chances. Chris, did you think we were sort of lucky not to concede a little bit?
No, I didn't think we were lucky at all. I think defensively we were strong. Every team's going to get a chance in a game. You have to expect that. Preston had the chances. I just think they lacked a bit of quality to finish them off. But a team like us, if you give us chances, we will be clinical. And Preston, you are right, Preston did have a few chances where they could have probably scored, but, you know, you can't leave us out the game for that long and expect us not to score. We will score.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Stefan Zini was looking dangerous every time he got the ball and eventually made that breakthrough, you know, rounding the goalkeeper. And I'm sure, you know, we saw the Preston shooting narrowly wide and thinking, oh, that could have been a goal there. But with the form you're in, you probably weren't too worried.
No, as I said, I'd try and do my job for the team. And, you know, if I manage to make some saves, I make them.
Well, you did a good job I think it was late in the second half as well. Preston had a chance. You know, we sort of caught napping a little bit at the back.
Yeah, through one on one.
Yeah. And you came up big on that one.
No, I just managed to close the space a bit on that one. Stepped out and, yeah, again, it's just doing my job. It comes natural. You know, I don't try and do anything spectacular. I just try and help the team as much as I can.
What goes through your head when you've got a player coming at you one-on-one? Like, when they're running at you, you're there, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, like, I don't know, if I was a goalkeeper, I'd probably be thinking, just don't foul him? Or do you have a game plan of whether to go out or hang back? Or how do you approach it?
I try and make them beat me. I don't try and go down early. I try and stand as big as I can for as long as I can. You know, if they score past me, it's fair play. They've done the job. But I try and not make it easy for them at all. I try and stay, because I'm a fairly big lad, I try and stay up as big as I can and close the angle as much as I can. And, you know, the lads on our team laugh about me saying I'm a Scouse gorilla because, you know, as soon as they come one-on-one with me, you know, like Liam Bolland always calls me, you know, the big Scouse gorilla, because it's hard. As soon as you get close to me, it's very difficult to get around.
That's got to be that's a good quality for a goalkeeper to have, I reckon. You know, how to get around.
Has it changed at all? I mean, we think of, you know, goalkeepers making themselves big, kind of Kasper Schmeichel doing star jumps in front of the striker or whatever. It, has the technique changed at all? Because, you know, obviously the goalkeeper has to make themselves big, but obviously it seems like goalkeepers come out a little bit more compact, you know, so that the ball doesn't go through their legs or they don't leave gaps and make the striker shoot for the corners.
Yeah, when I was taught to be a goalkeeper, my coaches were kind of old school, like solid, strong goalkeepers. And then I kind of seen that the older I got, the keepers coming up below me were more agile, a bit more springy. You're right, they stand up a bit, like they're a bit taller, whereas I try and be as low as I can because I am quite tall. There's different goalkeepers out there. There's me, and then there's the likes of Langerak, who's very dangly, agile. And I'm the opposite. I'm more like a solid goalkeeper. More powerful, whereas, again, Langerak's a lot more springy and agile.
So you're sort of working with the physical traits that you've got to make a style that suits you, as any other outfield player would do.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
So thinking about the game, I mean, what was the message at halftime from Zoch after that first half, which was, you know, quite competitive, even though you did go in with the lead?
Zoch just told us to stay patient. He goes, chances will come. He goes, don't force it. Don't force the game. Again, the longer games go for us, it's we tend to not worry, but kind of, why aren't we scoring goals? And I think we're learning over the last few weeks that that's normal in football. And, you know, sometimes we're in for a game. And Zoch just told us to stay patient and, you know, chances will come again. And he did.
Well, and in the end, we did get those chances. 1-2-0. Moving on into the sixth round, where we will face off against the Melbourne Knights. I know last week, Josh, you mentioned that it was a bit of a FNR derby in the fifth round with Preston and Avondale. Looks like we've got another one ahead of us with the Avondale against the Knights. What are we expecting against the Knights? You know, so playing them at Knights Stadium, what are we expecting?
An absolute battle, I think. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. It's going to be two teams who are going to be physical. We've both got qualities, both teams. It's going to be, if it's anything like the home game that we had against them, it's going to be one hell of a game to come watch.
As a player, do you have, like, with the FFA Cup draw and that sort of stuff, when you're, you know, taking a look at who you might face, as a player, do you have, like, a certain team that you're, like, hoping that you draw against? Like, so, for example, you're watching the draw going, oh, yeah, you know, I hope we get this team, or you're going, oh, geez, it'd be really tough if we came up against this opponent, or you just sort of take a neutral stand and just take who you get, or, like,
I think everyone thinks they want the lower team, like the lower seed, the team in the draw. It's very common because you think that you want to play the NPL teams later on in the competition. So when I was watching the draw, I was hoping we would have got the lower seed, the teams. But it is football's. It is what it is, and we've got Melbourne Knights. We've got to face them and got about 90 minutes or 120 minutes to win, and that's it.
And Melbourne Knights, you know, they've improved a lot this season, you know, had some pretty good early form, obviously got an in-form target man up front in Hamish Watson. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of the barrage of balls into the box that maybe is the threat next game? In the FA Cup, I mean, not in the
league. To be honest with you, when we play at Melbourne Knights at home, I think we were pretty taken back at the way they play football. Melbourne Knights are normally a direct team. You know, they go straight to the strikers or Tommy Oscock, anyone who's up top. But when I was standing back, obviously, behind the game and watching it, I was surprised at how well they can actually play football this year. So I think they've got both aspects. Same as us. You know, we've got Liam up top. If you need to go direct, we can. And it's just going to be a really good battle between two good teams.
So you, their development in their game plan probably makes them a little bit of a different threat to last and past seasons.
Yeah, 100%. They've got a great variety of ways of beating teams. They can go over the top with the quick lads they've got, and you can go straight direct to Hamish. And you know, we've just got to be ready for everything that they throw at us.
Drawing another, you know, tough team in the cap. Do you reckon that's going to have a negative effect on the team at all later in the season? You know, we've had this big four-game period where we've played really tough teams, and then in the FFA Cup to get another blockbuster fixture. Is that, you know, going to take a toll maybe mentally or physically on the players, do you reckon? Could it be a bit of a negative in that aspect? Or
no, I think our team's full of big characters. You know, we've got a lot of special people on our team, and I know that they want to stand up to these games. They want to be involved in these games because that's why we play football. We play football to play in these tough, you know, pressure cooker games. And you know, I think we can stand up to most teams at most competitions now. I think we're ready for it.
Well, speaking of tough games as well, we had another tough game as well on Saturday night, taking on Heidelberg away. Managed to get a 1-1 draw. I mean, it's always a tough encounter whenever we come up against Heidelberg. Having played 3 games in 7 days as well, you know, sort of added an extra tough layer. How crucial was it to come away with that game, to come away from that game with a point?
It was massive as we had the 4 games and we had 4 games. We had Altona, Preston, Heidelberg, and now we've got Bentley. And my goal anyway was to win 3, draw 1, and you know we've drew against Heidelberg, against a tough opposition. They've won everything last year pretty much, and they're a well structured team, and they've been together for years, and they know exactly how to play and what suits them. And any team going against them, you know, they intimidate, they need to try and bully them. That's the bare minimum that Heidelberg give you, and we stood up against them and we matched them. Whereas I think last year we might have maybe struggled. This year they had nothing on us, I don't think. It was a very even game, and we managed to come away with a draw, which was a massive point for us, and we'll take that confidence into Bentley.
Well, did you see that point? Did you see it as more of 1 point gained or 2 points dropped?
The way the game went, I think it was more 1 point gained, my opinion. I think I think Heidelberg had the upper on us towards the end of the game. First half, I thought we dominated, we played well. Second half, they stepped up and, you know, took it to us. I think walking away from their ground with a point was huge. Not many teams can do that.
What is it like stepping into the cauldron that is the Olympic Village? I mean, I always joke it's like going back in time. It's like always the 1970s in Heidelberg. They're sort of the crowds on top of you, kind of almost baying for blood. It's kind of an intimidating atmosphere, and they're a team that can put physical pressure on you. Like, what is it like, you know, for the whole team playing in that environment?
As you can see in the first half, it was quite a feisty game. It was a lot of emotion going around. There was a lot of tackles and a lot of physicality in the game, and it's kind of like when you go there, you expect it. It's, you know, you have to stand up, or, you know, otherwise you're going to get completely run over. And you're right. As soon as you come onto that pitch, it's, you know, you got to be a man. You can't be a boy in them games, and you know you got to stand up. And I think we've done a good job at it. It is quite an intimidating pitch to go to, but you just got to focus on what the job is, and that's to win the game.
Well, you mentioned that we deal with that physicality better this season. Mm. Why is that?
I think, again, we've got a lot of special characters in our team. You know, we've got Lundy, Brandon Lundy, who's a completely special person. He's a different breed to anyone I've ever met, to be honest with you. And he doesn't fear no one. We've signed players who don't fear people. We've got a filler in there who's an ox. You know, our centre-backs are fearless. You know, we've got a team full of fearless people. And when we step into games like Heidelberg, you know, they can't scare us, and that's why we stand up so well against them.
I mean, I did think it was an excellent result to get a point, especially because two of the more physical players who would be useful in that environment, in Liam Boland and Matt Reid, were both, you know, suspended for accumulated yellow cards.
Yeah, no, we brought Filler back, though. We've dropped Filler back in the centre back. And then we brought, obviously, Valentini, Yui, and Joey played up top with Zinni. And, you know, we didn't make many changes to the team. We only took two out and brought two in. And it's, you know, all of our players are ready to play. You know, we're all mentally ready and mentally strong for any game like that. And whether you're on the bench or you're not, you know, we're told to be ready for every situation, and that's what every player is.
It looked like a really attacking lineup on paper, I must admit. You know, pretty much foregoing the dedicated holding midfielder, I guess Yite was playing back there, but, you know, he's such a creative presence as well. So it was almost fighting fire with fire when you're going away against a team that, you know, maybe you'd be expected to take a little bit of a step back and defend against.
Yeah, again, like, because we're defending so well at the minute, as long as one of our midfield hold, we can press on as many as we can, as long as we've got one anchor sitting. The rest of us can push on and try and score, as long as we know what we need to do as a structure. And whoever plays as a six or whoever plays in the midfield, and you all talk and you communicate. And if you push on, one has to stay. And that's what we've all learned through the coaches.
Well, you mentioned our defensive strength there as well. For the last, well, I don't know, say 20 minutes or so, Heidelberg were really, you know, banging on the door, really pushing hard for that equaliser. I mean, you made a couple of great saves, in particularly one late. The defensive unit, I mean, as a whole, stood strong. So how much confidence does that give you guys as a unit going forward, knowing that when one of the top teams in the league is going as hard as they can to get a winner, that you guys can stand up to the test?
Yeah, it gives me a lot of confidence anyway with the team in front of me. And we've got great defenders, and you know, we've recruited well this year also, and that's credit to the coaching staff and the club for bringing these players in. But as a goalkeeper looking forward at my boys in front of me, it gives me a lot of confidence knowing that not many teams can break us down.
And you know, they did have a lot of possession, Heidelberg, in certain stages of the game. Was that part of the game plan to, you know, let them have it a little bit and hit on the counter attack, or was that just something you adapted to given the game situation and just, you know, you dealt the hand that you were played, essentially?
Yeah, I think that the first half, I didn't think they had any possession at all. I think they were just backs to the wall and just tried to see the half in at 1-0. Second half, you're completely right. They hammered us, to be honest with you. But it became more of a transition game for us as we're trying to catch them on the counter. So we dropped off, let them have it, and then as soon as they couldn't break us down, and we pinched it, we tried to break on them, which almost happened. Well, we almost scored a few times.
Yeah. And then he shot late as well. Was it blocked away by a header? It looked threatening shot.
Apparently the boys are saying that was going in. But, you know, we can adapt on the pitch. If a team are going to pressure us, like we're expecting Bentley's do on the weekend, you know, we have to learn, we have to adapt fast. And the better teams do that. And, we can come away with some kind of points, whether to be a draw or a win.
Well, you mentioned Bentley as well. That's our next opponent coming up this weekend. So what are we expecting from them?
They're going to play football very well, and we've got to match them. They're probably up there one of the best footballing teams in this league. They're very well drilled with the coach, and you know, we know what they're going to bring. And as long as we can somehow nullify that or stop them in some aspects, you know, I think we'll do well and get the points.
Do you reckon the 3 games in 7 days will have any sort of effect carrying on into the Bentley game? You know, whether it's mentally or physically at all?
All the boys are well aware that if we continue in the cup, that this is going to come. You know, all these games are going to... we're going to play 3 games in 1 week, this month or next month or whatever it'll be. So the boys are well prepared and well trained for it. You know, our strength and fitness coach has got us very fit. The outfield boys are running 12Ks a game, so it's they're very well drilled, and you know, the units, all them. I say again, like, even Brandon Lundy, he's running around after training like a headless chuck. You know, we call him Ed from The Lion King, the crazy hyena. He just runs around like an idiot, but you know, it's we've got a lot of energy in our team, and you know, they're very well drilled.
Well, with that, I think we'll go to a break, Chris, but we've got lots more to come with you on the other side, getting into a bit more in depth about your background, your career to date, and, you know, what makes you and the rest of the Avondale dressing room tick. But we've got that after the break, so stick with us here on Avenger Radio. Avenger Radio on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Avenger Radio, coming to you live on FNR. My name is Branson. I'm here with Josh, as well as Avondale Gloveman Chris Oldfield. Chris, we had a bit of a look at, you know, the last week's games just before. So what we wanted to do now, though, is have a bit of chat have a bit of a chat, sorry, to you and learn a little bit more about your career as well, because it has been a pretty fascinating story so far, if I do say so myself, doing some research. I thought it was interesting. So, I mean, you grew up in Liverpool. You're a Liverpool FC fan.
Yep.
And you started your career, or well, pretty much started your career, in their youth system. You were signed your first professional or semi-professional contract with Liverpool. As a local and a fan of the club, I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, it was massive. I had a chance of going to Liverpool or Everton, and obviously my family are dominated by Reds, and because of me parents and the way it fell, I managed to sign at Liverpool when I was 11. And it was a proud moment for me, especially being brought up in the city, and I love home. To me, it's always going to be home, and you know, it was a massive achievement for me at that age.
What would it be like being, you know, an 11-year-old and walking into the Liverpool system, you know, everything that's involved there with, you know, facilities wise and Anfield and everything? Like, would that just be totally overwhelming, or was it a little bit different because you'd grown up as a fan, so you sort of knew a little bit more about the club?
It made it worse, to be honest with you. Being a fan being a fan of the club and going in there, I was pretty starstruck by what I was looking at and where it was. And you know, even I was walking down the hallways and they got photographs of players who have made the first team. And as an 11-year-old, you're walking down to Steven Gerrard, Jamie Carragher, you know, Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen, all on the walls. And, you know, every now and again, you see them coming through the academy and talking to players. And, you know, you were starstruck pretty much every other week. And it was a pressure. The pressure was on your shoulders constantly of not letting the club down in the city. It was a strange feeling. It's very strange being brought up there, because Liverpool's a very family-orientated city, and if you're involved in a club and brought up around it, it's, you know, you kind of feel like you can't let them down.
There is a sort of extra pressure with Liverpool because, you know, the club is almost self-styled in that everything means a little bit more because it's Anfield, because it's Liverpool, because you never walk alone, all that kind of stuff, and that sort of must filter down to the youth ranks.
It does. It's I've done an interview about 2 years back regarding my background and what happened with me at Liverpool and stuff, and from 11 years of age, we were always taught that winning's the only option, not never losing. And, you know, you winning for the club. You're never being involved. It wasn't about being involved, it was just winning. And it's how much the club demand from you, even at 11-year-old. It's and, you know, you kind of, like, the word groomed is better, is not a great word, but it's like kind of groomed into thinking that winning's the only option for that club. And Liverpool is the biggest club in the world. And especially as a young player, you believe it. You got no choice to believe it. You're in the environment 3-4 times a week. And it was just this pressure used to build up on you. It was good though. I'd never look back on it. It was the best time of my life.
So what was the highlight out of, so how long did you spend at Liverpool or in the system, and then what was, you know, your fondest memory of your time there?
I was there for eight, nine years. I was there. I was there a long time, and probably signing my professional contract, to be honest with you. I signed pro there when I was 18, and that was probably the biggest, or maybe when I trained with the first team for the first time. That was probably one of the biggest too.
Well, tell us about that. I can't just leave us hanging there.
It's a good story, actually. I was in school, and I was in geography, actually, and I had a text message from your goalkeeper coach saying, "Are you free?" And I was like, texting back saying, "No, I'm in school. I'm in geography." He went, "The first team need a goalkeeper to train with them. Can you come here?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I can." So I stood up and I went to leave the classroom, just went to walk out, and the teacher tried to stop me. And I was like, "Can you please excuse me?" And she was like, "No, you're not leaving." And I went, "Well, I am." So I opened the door and kind of forcefully opened the door and pushed it against the wall a bit. And then I left, went straight home, and I said to my mum, "I need you to take me to Melwood." She went, "Why?" I said, "I'm training with the first team." She was like, "No problem." So she took me. I trained, and I was a 15-year-old training with, I think it was about 70% of the first team, because a lot of them were on international duty, so they were all training with me. Mm. So there was Xabi Alonso, Dirk Kuyt, Pepe Reina, Jamie Carragher, you know, all these players were there training. And then I went back to school the next day, and the headmaster goes, "I need to speak to you. So I'm thinking I'm getting expelled." I thought, I'm gone here. I'm going to be suspended. So I sat down, and he goes, "You know why I've got you in the office?" I'm like, "I'm thinking you're going to expel me." And he goes, "No, how was training? How are the players?" I was like, oh, yeah, they were fine. They were good, actually. Yeah, no problem. You know, told them a bit about it. And he was like, well, have a good day, mate. Off you go. I was like, all right, no problem.
It could have gone a lot worse.
By the way, the school's now knocked down. It's no longer there. I wonder why.
Well, you know, that's where the town's priorities are at, I suppose.
It is. I kid you not. It is. I'm not even joking. Everton's about the club. It was weird when I was growing up in school. The education side of things, they kind of let me off with a lot of things because of where I was and what I was doing. And I got away with a lot of things other people's wouldn't anyway, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a bit of special treatment.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
I mean, who impressed you the most out of that squad? I mean, I don't know. It must have been a bit of a blur walking in there, but, you know, who had the craziest shot or, you know, skills?
The best player I've come against, as well as one's obvious, that was Steven Gerrard. He was probably, he was a phenomenal player. He was very humble, quiet, and weren't a loud player either. He just showed his passion on the pitch. But the best player was Torres by a mile. Fernando Torres was 6'2". So quick and powerful, and his finishing was off the scale. Like, every time you come against you, you know he was going to score somehow. And he was probably the best player I've ever played or been a part of in training with.
Did you ever save one of his shots?
Probably not. No chance.
I mean, even if you just got one, that would just be so good. Just, you know, shoot him a DM or whatever on Twitter. Hey,
probably hit me in the face or probably in the neck or something.
So after your time at Liverpool, unfortunately, though, you were eventually released by the club. And, you know, as fans, we read about this happening sort of like all the time at the end of the season. Yep. But from a player's perspective, what goes through your mind when that happens?
It's kind of like you get put in like a bubble, like this little false world. And it's you feel like you're going to be a footballer for the rest of your life. And you feel like it's all going to be sweet and you're going to go into the next team and you're going to play, you're going to make a load of money. And the reality is you don't. It's a very cruel game, this game. And I learned that at 19. And I thought that with my background, I would have stepped into another club. But I didn't. And I had to try and fight and claw my way to play again. And it was a very sad moment in my life. And it was more the fact that it was taken away from me. Even though I knew it might have been coming at one point, being taken away from me was the hardest part to deal with.
Because, I mean, so many young players, you know, they make it that far in the youth systems, in Premier League clubs, and then sort of chewed up and spit out, basically. And, you know, how hard is it to get back on your two feet when you're, you know, suddenly gone from the training with the first team at Melwood to, you know, playing non-league football or, you know, semi-professional?
It was difficult, but I'm lucky that, as I said before, people from Liverpool got very close families. You know, we're brought up around my brother and my sister and my mum and dad. And if it weren't for them at that time, it would have been probably an uglier situation in life for me. And my family helped me through that. And they kind of made me, you know, they picked me up when I needed to be picked up. And they pushed me, they drove me to continue and make me believe that, you know, that isn't the end for me. And that's the sad reality to this game. It's very cruel, and my family helped me through that. It was very sad at the time.
So after that, what was next for you? So once you were released, I mean, did you have other options, you know, to join professional clubs, or, you know, what did you do next?
So what happened with me at Liverpool? Rafa Benitez was on his way out at the club at the time, and I was getting told that I was going to sign a new contract. I was going to renew my contract. And so weeks went by, and it kind of came to light towards the end of the season towards the end of my contract that he was kind of like trying to see for himself what he wanted to do. So instead of me being naive, I didn't think of trying to look elsewhere then. I just thought, oh, no, they've promised me a contract, I'll re-sign. And then literally the last day of my contract expiring, which was the end of May, he said, we're not going to renew it. And then obviously it was too late for me to try and find a new club because everyone had their quota and the roster done for the following year. So I was trying to claw around, trying to find teams to sign for. And every door I knocked on, they were already signed up their two or three keepers for the following season. So I had to try and play somewhere. And that's why I dropped down the levels to try and play.
Well, you played at a few non-league clubs. I think you played at Chester, Bangor City in the Welsh Premier League, you know, and Warrington, you know, what was it like playing for those clubs, you know, going from Liverpool and everything that that, you know, involves to this, you know, non-league environment?
It was very difficult transition, to be honest with you. But I tried to adapt as quick as I can, as quick as I could, sorry. Chester was, it was an eye-opener for me because I was a 19-year-old kid, pretty much, going into against men, 35-year-old men, and it was, I kind of learned, I learned a bit there, but not a lot. I kind of thought I'd drown on a bit, and I got put on the bench, and then I didn't play. So I seen where that was heading, so I tried to get out as quick as I could. And then that's when Banger came in, and I signed halfway through the season for them, and we won the title for them, and we managed to qualify for the Champions League. But then, funny enough, yeah, because the top team in the Welsh Premiership qualified for the Champions League.
That's pretty big. Yeah. Wow.
And then they go into the qualifying groups, and that's when they play against other seeded teams. But at the end of that year, they released me because, for other reasons, I ended up getting released there. And then I had to try and play somewhere, so that's where I went down to Warrington and played there, which I played consistently for a year, which was good.
Well, after that, you came across to Australia. You signed for Hume City. How did that switch come about? I mean, so obviously playing in the UK, had you heard anything about football in Australia or the NPL? Or, I mean, what sort of led you to move literally halfway across the world to come play football in a country that's not known for its footballing history?
So before this happened, I was at Aberdeen and I was trialled with them for 3 weeks. I travelled to Germany with them, played against Mönchengladbach and Bochum over there. I'd played well against them, and the agent who was looking after me at the time was pretty certain I was going to sign for Aberdeen on a professional contract. And again, it was when the timing went right and they signed the Man City goalkeeper instead of me. His name was Gonzalez, I can't remember his first name. He came in front of me, and I was done. I was just thinking, what am I going to do with football? And I reached out to someone here, and Hume straight away signed me, pretty much. They brought me Louis Osewski, actually, the Preston coach. He was like, yeah, bring him over. And Hume brought me here. And obviously the rest is history now, because I'm sitting here with you guys.
Well, speaking of history, while you're at Hume, you did have quite an incredible feat. You did something that only one other person in the history of football in the world has done. Tell us a bit about that.
It was against Melbourne Knights in the quarterfinals of the final series when I was at Hume. Yeah, managed to save 4 out of 4 penalties and we won.
4 out of 4 penalties in a penalty shootout?
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty special night, to be honest with you. I think I lost the plot about 4 times.
I mean, in penalty shootouts, like, what's your strategy? Do you pick a side before they've even shot? Do you wait until the last possible moment? Like, how did you achieve that feat? Was it?
I remember Stipe took the first one when he was at Knights, and he scored against me in the season, and I thought he's going to go the same way again, and he did. But I managed to go a bit earlier this time, and I saved it. And then I kind of seen like the players who were stepping up looked nervous, and I kind of gauge off their run up and how narrow they run to the ball and how wide they are. And it just, yeah, I don't know, it's weird. Like last minute, I try and move quite late, and I try and watch the way they're running up to the ball. And if they beat me, they beat me. It's the odds are against me, to be honest with you. So if I get the right side, I probably will save it.
Because the pressure is all on the taker, I suppose. So
yeah,
for a keeper, it's you know, you either let it in and you know it goes in, or you're a hero. So
yeah, it's just, as I said, as for me, I move late, very very late, and I try and just pick one side and commit. And if the ball comes my side, I'll try my best to stop it.
Have you ever taken a penalty yourself?
No,
no,
don't plan on either.
Not going to do a Liam Reddy like you
no,
did
there's
on
no chance.
Friday night.
I'll leave that to the boys.
Might just relieve Liam Boland of his penalty-taking duties and go, do you know what, mate? I reckon I can give it a crack.
Oh, no chance. There's no chance. Liam does a good job at that.
The keeper from Heidelberg was taking penalties last season, I think.
Was he?
Yeah,
Peter
Edes, yeah. And I saved it. I saved his penalty, and then he didn't take one after.
Well, there you go. Yeah. We've got so much left to get through and not too much time to do it. I want to ask a little bit about the change room you've got now at Avondale. Mm-hmm. I mean, give us an insight behind the scenes. Who are the big characters?
We've got B1 and B2, Steph Valentini and Brandon Lundy. Those pair are absolutely mental. Like, Lundy can dance a little bit, but Steph tries to. It's like an epileptic fit in the corner. You know, he's throwing his arms all over the place to play people are ducking and diving, trying to dodge it. You know, and we got a few quiet boys, but yeah, those two are absolute characters. If you're having a bad day, you come into our change room and watch them pair. They just rub, like, just rub off on each other. Like, Lundy's dancing, Steph pops out round and he starts going mental, and then everyone's laughing. It's just, it's comical, I swear. If you could video it, you'd die. Ollie's a die.
Well, talking about, you know, change rooms, and that's just like, so you're obviously the co-captain with Liam Bolan, yeah. But you also have another, possibly even more crucial role in the locker room. You're mm-hmm. in charge of the music,
yeah.
Right? So you've got a big responsibility. So it's your job mm-hmm. to, you know, get everyone pumped for the game and then get the party started, you know, after the match.
Yeah.
How big of a responsibility is that? How much time and effort do you have to put into choosing, you know, the right playlist or the right song?
Yeah, so it's probably took us about 12 rounds to realise that I have to put R&B music on a Monday because not everyone likes the hard music. But now the boys are all into the, you know, the club kind of music. And funny enough, I fell across a few good podcasts or playlists and the lads love it. But the club needs to buy us an extra speaker now because it's not loud enough. You know,
yes.
One speaker's not loud enough in the changing room, and I've been telling Tony Scrow to buy another one, but you know, the tight ass won't do it.
Well, might have to happen. And another question. So on the pitch, you're pretty vocal. I mean, you do a lot of yelling mm-hmm. on the pitch. Is your voice just ruined after games? You do a lot of yelling. I mean, let's be honest.
After a game, it's a bit hoarse. Yeah, it's like it's a bit croaky. But you know, during the game, I just try and help the boys by talking as much as I can, whether it's rubbish or whether it's keep me engaged in the game. But after the game, yeah, my voice is finished. Like, it's I'm at home, you know, just trying to drink water and trying to get it right. But yeah, it's I get used to it.
And lastly, one last question. I mean, obviously, you're a big Liverpool fan yourself. Mm-hmm. So have you told Zocchi that you might not be available for the Kingston City game because you'll be off in Madrid? Or have you floated that idea at all to him?
No, I haven't floated that at all. I'm here to win a title for Avondale. I'm not going with Liverpool. I've seen me fair few games in the past, and I was lucky enough to watch plenty of them, so I'll watch this one on TV.
Well, Chris, I think that's as good a place as any to leave it. Thank you so much for coming into the studio and joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Lots of great stories, and best of luck for the game on the weekend and the rest of the season.
Cheers, gents. Thank you.